Good
Good
morning.
morning. Hey, it worked the first time.
I think it's whenever anybody is on other than just me and you. I don't know if like for some reason it doesn't like when I'm like it doesn't like me being number two. Way. I don't know what it is. How are
Well,
you doing?
all right, glad you're able to make it. I was surprised anybody was. I put the notice out pretty late.
Well, we had been out of town, so I've literally had the entire weekend pretty much open, with the exception of like the one big project. Kristen is putting together a play set for the yard. So, but it's gotten really cold, so I don't want to be out there building that in like, 30-degree weather.
A play set? What are you gonna put?
So
Swings?
it's swings and treehouse and a slide. My youngest is like right on the edge of being too old for it, but he had been asking for one and Kristen got him one. So we want to get it built so that at least it gets 1 year out of it before he's
Before.
already like, yeah, I changed my mind. And we're
Hey,
like, oh crap.
at least he wants it. In today's
Right.
world, I don't know many too many kids asking for that.
Yeah, that's fair. So we've been working on that, and she's done the bulk of it. But we're gonna try to get some of the heavy lifting done this afternoon when it's a little bit warmer.
Yeah, that's good.
So yeah, we got some shopping done last week. I found a handful of comics. I think all three of the ones I found are ones I got on the trip. I've got a huge stack of Supermans I've been saving for when we podcast, but then I like look at these weird ones today, and I was like, man, I'd rather do weird stuff. And I love Superman; it's like my favorite. But I'm just like, I was just in a weird mood today. Henry has caught the podcasting bug. Jack was sick for a couple of weeks in a row, and I was like, Henry, I hadn't done one in a while. You want to do a quick one? And so we did one. And then before the week was even out, he's like, can we do another one? I was like, sure. So, and then he wants to podcast today. I was like, man, I'm already going to be doing like 2.5 hours, probably. I don't know. We'll see. So we might do another one this afternoon. I have no idea.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. He caught the bug early.
He's into the manga, isn't he?
Yeah, he's into Yokai Watch and One Piece. And what's I would well he started watching the show Dragon Ball when the creator died, like, was it last week, I think. And he really wanted to start watching the show again, so I don't know, he may start reading those too. I've started rereading those because I picked up a few of those on the trip. But
Where'd you go?
we went to St. Louis.
Okay.
Yeah, so I hit a store in Peoria, and then we hit a couple of places in St. Louis, or just outside of. So, but it was just a short trip. It was his birthday week, so we always have spring break off, and usually do a little trip for their birthdays when we can. So, like Jack, we went to Chicago, and this one we went to St. Louis. And
Did you do anything in St. Louis there, like specifically?
They did the arch. I am a chicken. I saw how small that tram was. I'm like, I ain't getting in there with four people.
It's a little egg. It's a little
Yeah.
egg you get into. I've been in it.
Yeah, I was like, that's a little too small for my comfort because I get kind of claustrophobic if it's real enclosed with people. So they went up in that, and then we did like a riverboat ride, which was cool, and we did the aquarium. But like I say, we only had like 2 days, so like one day of shopping and a couple of days of like sightseeing, and it was gone, you know. It's fun though, a little short trip.
If you're claustrophobic, stay out of that. It's even worse in the summer because it's hot.
Oh, I imagine. She said
Muggy
at
and
least the
hot.
trip was pretty quick, but she said you can't see very much up there though.
Yeah, there's not a lot of window. I mean,
Yeah.
I'm sure at one point in time you could. And
Yeah.
then there's more buildings and more
Right.
stuff erected, so.
Yeah, that made me feel a little less bad about it because I like to do experiences when I can, even if I'm not comfortable. What the hell is it called now? The Willis Tower? Is
Yeah, the
that?
one is that Chicago?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
So I did the ledge on it, even though I really don't love heights.
Heights.
Yeah, but I'm like, okay, this is my experience and my time to do it. So I'm like, I can handle it for a couple minutes. So I did
Yeah.
it. And yeah, it's a whew. It's a long way down.
It's pretty cool though. They have
It is
the
cool.
glass floor so you or plexiglass floor so you could see down like you
Right.
yeah.
Yeah, so we did that, and that was me stepping out of my comfort zone a little, but I was like, I don't know. The idea of me, if that thing broke down and I got stuck in it, I was like, I couldn't bring myself to get into it.
That's the
'Cause I
hard thing. It's like worse than a elevator, so
Right.
at least it feels that way. So yeah, I guess I didn't think about it. If it break down, I would be like freaking out, you know.
Well, my wife and my youngest are very small, and but me and Henry, or me and Soph and Jack are big enough that it was a really cramped fit, because they have a sample one you can try, right, down in the
Yeah.
lobby. It's like, okay, this is what you're getting into. So all of us were in there, and I literally was in there for like a minute, and I went, nope. I didn't even like sitting in the sample ones. I had to get out of it.
I'm sure they have like some kind of way out if something happened.
I would hope so.
I mean, I would think that there's some kind of like open the egg and climb these ladders out or something like that.
Right. Because you would think there'd have to be some kind of like
I never
staircase or
asked the
something.
question, but you'd think they have some kind of, if a zombie apocalypse occurred and nobody was there to man it.
The safest place in
Yeah.
the zombie apocalypse is the arch.
That would be a horrible horror story.
Was it the what was the name of that book now? I can't remember. Man, was it Manifest Destiny, where everywhere they kept going, they kept seeing like arches?
I don't know.
Did you read that
No,
one?
I haven't.
Oh, it's like Lewis and Clark, but like if the land was full of like
Oh,
cryptids and monsters.
the Image comic.
Yeah. Yeah. They and like everywhere they would go, they would see like these arches, and I was, because you know like the whole archway to the Midwest, so like they were trying to say like it was like a natural growth at one point as well, not just you know the giant architectural piece or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good book. I don't think I read all of it because it ran a really long
I think
time,
I
but
read the first arc. I have it all, I think,
do you?
but I haven't read it all.
Yeah, it was one of those I skipped around. I would get it for a while, and I used to, you know, when the money was a lot tighter, I would pop in and out of books sometimes, and that was one I kind of popped in and out of through its run, or if it was one that like the library was picking up. I'm just now going back and getting all the Walking Dead trades because a lot of times I would just read them at the library, so. I was picking them up in the deluxe editions, and I finally was like, oh, this is like, I could spend my money better than getting these. Because, like, on my comic shop, they usually have those used for like $7 or something, and you get like, what, five or six issues. So I've been picking up a handful of trades every month and rereading them that way. This is
Now,
the first.
me and Bill were talking like how much shipping is from my comic shop, and then doing like, what do you think would be the minimal order just to have a subscription box, just so you could get away with it, you know?
Right. I feel like there was at least one month where all I ordered was maybe previews and something else. Because what I'm doing now pretty much is DCBS, I get Marvel, Image, Dark Horse, who else do they mark off?
DC.
DC and Boom, Dynamite, and Indie Books, ones that aren't marked down through DCBS, more than 35%, I get from my comic shop. So it ends up being, I mean, it saves me like pennies to do it, but that way I have the option of like when I do see a book I want to grab, what's that weird thing they did a couple of weeks ago? And man, they would not let me order two of them, and it made me mad because Jack wanted one. But the Marvel must-haves, did you see that? They like
Oh
reprinted
yeah, they
three in
reprinted three
one.
comics. Yeah, my
Yeah.
comic shop gave them away for free.
Nice.
Yeah,
So Mike, they had it
but
for like a buck.
that was a meaty freebie though.
Yeah, it was
I
like
mean,
80
it's like,
pages.
yeah, that's
Yeah.
crazy.
So I ordered one for me, and I was trying to get one for Jack, and they would not let me order one. So I was going to try to wait till that process, then try to order it again or something. I don't know if they have like a. They've started all these new rules like that, like the way they're doing shipping now. So I don't know.
Yeah,
But
I have this order like in my, and I just won't pull the trigger. I don't have it. I haven't
the
done it yet.
shipping.
Like I've come so close. But it's like $35 to
Oh God.
$40 shipping. That's like crazy time.
Jesus. And I
'Cause
used to.
it takes away every benefit that you get from the savings. Yeah. And they used to have like a low tier, like, oh, it'll ship 7 to 13 business days, and that's what I used to select, and it wasn't that bad. So they must be paying. I know shipping has gone up, but they must be paying a lot for the handling piece, which I don't blame them because you have to hire somebody to go find the books and then wrap them up, put them in a box, and put postage on them and shipping. You have to pay somebody to do that, so.
I tell you, I used to think they had the best shipping until DCBS switched to these new cartons, and those new cartons are those are awesome.
Yeah.
I wish everybody would switch to that. They remind me of the ones that the manga place around here uses, because they've been using those for a while. What's the name of the place? Right Stuff. And they're outside of Des Moines, and they've been using those kind of cartons with the trays in them for years. So I think
Yeah.
it's cool that DCBS has got those.
That is cool.
I don't know. What have you been up to?
Not much work.
James Bond.
James Bond, which I'll talk a little bit about. Yeah, I've been. It's weird. I don't know. I'm finding stuff that I just never had any interest in. I mean, I started reading the Dynamite comics with James Bond and enjoying them, but I've never been into that genre, I guess. And after my Charles Bronson run, I was like, what am I gonna do now? Like, what's gonna catch my eye? And I just put on A View to a Kill just randomly. And I said, you know what? I'm gonna go on this little tear of Bond films, and it's been quite fun.
I think I've seen a lot of them, especially the modern ones. I think I've seen all but one of the like stuff that's like Pierce Brosnan and onward. Roger Moore, I think I've seen maybe half of, and I've seen all the Sean Connery ones. I don't know if I've seen any of the Timothy Dalton ones though, because that was in the 80s, and I probably was not interested in James Bond in the 80s as a kid, you know. Even though I think we watched like a View to a Kill, not View to a Kill, which is the one Live and Let Die. We watched
That's
that
my
on,
favorite. That's my
we watched that
Roger
like on
Moore, because
this.
it's got like a supernatural aspect to it.
Oh
It's
yeah,
just,
oh yeah,
so fun. A matter of fact, he's my favorite Bond. Like,
yeah, he's good.
no, I Roger Moore. I don't know. I think it's because he was the Bond when I was growing up. Like when I was old enough to know that. And I didn't watch a lot of Bond back then, but I knew he was, when I was going to Star Wars and all the other movies, I knew he was the Bond, So like he was always my Bond, and then like he's got like a campiness to him
He does.
that I really appreciate. Like he's not as suave. I mean, he acts suave, but he's almost got like this campiness that I adore. I don't know what it is, but
I loved what's his name? Jaws, and he was always in those movies.
oh yeah, Jaws. Well, I saw my first Jaws. I was aware of that guy. I mean, he was in Happy Gilmore, but I didn't realize how much he used his teeth. Like,
Yeah, all the time.
he was almost like a vampire, you know, like biting people's necks and killing them that way. I didn't realize, like, he was chewing through bars and
He like chewed through a cable in one, I remember.
yeah, and he's attacking James Bond in a train. I mean, he's just
Oh, man, he'd be a
he was
good
always
movie.
and he was always getting like thrown out, and then he'd come back later in the film.
You would need Jaws if you got stuck in the arch. He could chew through the side of the building.
Yeah, I'm sure he could.
But yeah, that those I think those were the two I remember as a little kid was Live and Let Die and Moonraker, because Moonraker was on
I
Bubblegum
haven't seen that
Cards.
one yet, but Moonraker is on my, it's like on my really want to watch list, but it's not on Max and it's
Oh
not
no.
streaming anywhere.
Oh, that sucks.
So my friend lent me a couple of DVDs. I thought it was the whole collection, right? But he lent me a bunch, and there's like three or four that are not digitally available.
Oh,
And
that
I was
sucks.
like, Moonraker, he didn't have. And I'm like, oh man, because I want to watch Moonraker and Octopussy. And
I think he did so many movies that he has two box sets, Roger Moore does.
yeah,
Because
but they
I
have
was
a
look.
full they have a full one,
Oh, okay.
but my wife keeps talking me out of it. She's like, how many DVDs you have there that are still unwrapped? And
I have a
it's like,
bunch too.
you got a good point.
Yeah.
So
Well,
it's like,
that'll happen is you'll buy it with the intention of watching it when it gets there. Or, with books too, I have the intention of reading a book when I order it. And then something else, a library book that has a due date, or I read something for the podcast, or I'm reading something for, just whatever comes along. And then that gets pushed back and back and back. And then 3 years later, it's still in the wrapper,
yeah.
I was thinking about that, about the Atlas book I added today to my DCBS order. I was like, man, I don't know if I ordered Venus. And then I'm like, well, dang it, you haven't even read the first one yet. It's still in the
You don't know how many times I've put those Fantagraphics Atlas books on my cart just because they look so damn awesome,
Yeah.
and then just take them out later because I'm fighting with myself, like, when are you going to read these, Mike? When are you going to read these? And then I
Yeah.
take them off. But the Venus one, I'm really, because she's, I like her as a character, like
Me
in Agents
too.
of Atlas. I like to know what her comics were back then, you know?
Well, that was my thought is I'm skipping the artist editions, but I want to do the comics library ones just because those aren't easy to get.
Yeah.
And they're not putting them out like crazy like Marvel would. There's one every what, 3 or 4 months. So it's a little pricey, but I don't know. What are they end up being? Maybe $30, I think. $35, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I ordered the newest one because I think it was like space, and I like all that weird. I don't even know what Marvel was doing. I mean, I like the space cabbie and
The
the
Space
Basil.
Cabbie was DC, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I enjoyed the
Oh.
DC stuff, so I'm curious to see what kind of stuff Marvel was doing and if I
Well,
would
that was
like it or not.
actually a time period I know nothing of. I mean,
Same.
I've read some of the Cap, Human Torch, and Submariner stuff in reprints, but almost nothing in the Atlas era, you know, in
Yeah.
terms of comic books.
The only stuff I would have read would have been the horror stuff that was getting reprinted, in the 70s and in the 90s, like in those like anthology books that reprinted Atlas stuff. And I don't remember what all they were called in the 70s, but I know like the 80s ones, or 90s ones, there was like Book of the Dead, and there was like a Curse of the Weird, and they would have like reprints sometimes of the old Atlas stuff in the back of those. So that's
Yeah.
the so I probably would have only read the horror, not like the Venus or the sci-fi or the superhero stuff. So I'm really curious. I've always heard good stuff about what's his name, Minelli, that apparently he was gonna be like the Jack Kirby, but then he like died on the subway or something.
Oh, really? I didn't hear about that.
I think it was him. Yeah, there was a fella who was doing their early Black Knight books, and he did a lot of their kind of mystery and stuff. And but yeah, he was coming home, and he was drunk or something, and he fell in front of a subway and died. And you know, he was Stan's guy, and so if he had made it to the Marvel launch, he probably would have been one of the great artists that we talk about, but because he passed away, you know, he only did the Atlas work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a bummer, but it's cool that they are reprinting some of this stuff.
I when every time I go through PS art books or that, it's like I get the itch, but I've been fairly in this month I allowed myself to cheat because I got a bonus,
Yeah.
and the order form had the Amalgam Omnibus and like
Oh, nice.
and it had the Marvel versus DC omnibus. And when are you going to get them to team up again where the companies agree to do this? You know what I mean? So it's
I
like
don't know, man. The breakneck.
I had to pull the trigger on that. And then the
The
other
rate
thing
they're
they
going, they might be a super company before it's over with, you know. I
so
don't know
there
what.
yeah there were t those two omnibuses though.
Yeah.
And then they had
Godzilla.
Godzilla, which I had to have, and Micronauts.
Yep. I didn't do those two just because I have Godzilla in Essentials and I have the full run of the original Micronauts. When they hit New Voyages, I'll start picking up the Micronauts ones. I got the first ROM, and I don't remember if I ordered the second one. I feel like it came at like a where it was like around Christmas or something when you had to order it, so I may not have. I figured I'd pick it up from in-stock trades or something. But yeah, that Godzilla is fun stuff. You're gonna like it.
And I think I picked up the a PS Art Books Golden Age Blue Beetle, and
Okay.
then what else did I get that was expensive? Oh, the Eric Larson Spider-Man Omnibus,
Nice. That's
because
a good run.
he's just my favorite.
Yeah.
Like he's probably my favorite like artist in terms of like what he did with Spider-Man and what he does with Savage Dragon. Like I like his stuff and a lot. Like
I think
he's
I
my
talked to
favorite
you
of the
about this one
bunch.
time that I think I appreciate him more as a Spider-Man artist than I did at the time. Like at the time I was like, ooh, he's not
McFarlane.
McFarlane, and he wasn't the guy that came on after. What was that guy's name? He was doing the old
Bagley.
Bagley. Those were my two guys in the 90s, and I
Well,
was like,
Bagley
ugh.
followed him,
He
so.
did, yep.
And
And
then he had that incredible run on Ultimate Spider-Man.
yep, his ultimate is great looking. But
He
and then
he's a good artist.
he is. I like him a lot.
I mean, I think he's doing New Warriors, and I'm reading that, and he's phenomenal.
But there was who was the guy who did Superman Man of Steel with
Bogdevine?
yes, he's another one at the time. I didn't like him because he wasn't Ordway or Juergens, but now I go back and I read his stuff and I'm just amazed by how creative he is. He was
That one I agree with. Like I if it wasn't Ordway or Juergens or you know like it just felt weird and
Yep.
his style was so in
Different.
your face.
Yep.
I don't know, dynamic. But he really told stories in a moving fashion.
He
Like
did.
it seems like the panels are moving. It's interesting.
He's grown on me a lot because, like I say, he was one of those. Just as a kid, I was like, ugh, I don't like this. But now I'm like, oh, heck yeah, give me more.
I was just listening to Liefeld's podcast, which I listen to pretty regularly, and he
Right.
was talking about the 90s, and he left a lot of stuff out that I thought were more important, but I guess that's more. Well, he said the most controversial is the what term he used, and I Superman dying, I that was amazing. Like
Yeah.
I don't think in terms of comics, I have ever seen community excited about comics. Like people you don't even know showing up at the comic store and
Oh yeah.
wanting to know about the death of Superman. Like I just had never seen that phenomenon. Like I saw the Batman, what Michael Keaton phenomenon where
Right.
everybody went nuts with Batman, but I
But
had
they would
never
get like
seen.
t-shirts and
Yeah,
hats. They weren't buying comics.
that was a merchandise thing.
Right.
I had never just seen people just raiding the comic store. I mean, there were lines.
Right.
And people just wanted the death of Superman. And then once they read the death of Superman, they wanted to go back and find the road to the death of Superman.
Right.
Like it was just incredible what it was. It was amazing. And then I know that they broke Batman's back, and that was also incredible because you got Bane and Batman and Azrael becoming the new Batman, and I don't know, there was some crazy stuff during that time that DC was doing.
Yeah. The thing to me, I guess, was like I had relatives who would be like, you read comics, right? And I had people that I picked up issues for. And that was the only time that's ever happened in my life, you know, where
Yeah.
I like my brother-in-law is like, hey, could you grab that Superman for me? And I'd be like, okay. But you know, that is what got me into pre-ordering was the death of Superman because I had ordered, you know, from like I was a curb store kid. I for the most part, comics I had were the stuff I was able to pick up at the corner store or the once in a rare moon where my mom would let me order the JCPenney Christmas catalog box, or she would let me, you know, if I begged enough, let me do like the 50-cent page order from Mile High that took like 2 months to get to you.
Yeah.
So the first time I remember pre-ordering was from New England Comics, and I didn't get the one that introduced Cyborg Hank Henshaw, but I got on almost as soon as the death of Superman got announced, you know, because I wasn't super in the know, like some people I'm sure were that probably knew it like months and months ahead of time, but I was on that like 3 month curve where I was able to like, hey, I'm ordering all this Superman stuff. Is there any way you could add like the Justice Leagues that I missed and the action and the Man of Steel, yada yada? And they're like, sure. So that's what actually got me on pre-ordering was the New England Comic Express or whatever they called their special order system.
Yeah.
And it was because of Death of Superman that I actually started pre-ordering every month. And I remember there was like a couple of months. Man, comics used to be so much cheaper back then, where I literally just ordered everything DC put out for like 2 months straight, and you know, as
Yeah.
my whole paycheck was going to ordering DC comics from New England Comics.
was the first time, I think, in my lifetime that I was reading Superman Weekly.
Yeah.
Like I would, as soon as that came in, I would gobble it up. You know, when
Yeah.
you'd have Adventures of Superman, Superman, Action Comics, Man of Steel, and then
Right.
any peripherally titles that had the shield on it. I was just eating it up. Like
Was
I
it Man
was.
of Tomorrow was the fifth week one or something like that?
Yeah,
Yeah.
that was the one that didn't last too long.
No. Well, it was
But
only like 3 or 4 times a year.
yeah. But yeah, I was addicted to like reading, and then between that and Valiant, like
Yeah.
I couldn't get enough. Like I was into the soap opera-ness of it where I would want to read it right away. Other than
Yeah.
that, I was always been in the mode where I would read. I was always a mood reader, always.
Right.
But until Superman hit, and then later on Batman, when those events hit where it was like you were Cataclysm or you were Night's End or
Right.
Nightfall or any of it, I'd get so sucked up in the world that I would just, hey, Catwoman came out, I need to read it right away. You know, it's like
I really wish they still, when they did events, they did do that mode because I find the way they write events now, if you're an all-in person, like I still think back about how they did the Star Wars, and maybe it's because of the way I read it. I just felt like they were just, you would pick up an issue of the Star Wars Bounty Hunter Wars, and like a third of it would be regurgitating what was in the regular Star Wars issue, you
Yeah,
know? And
rather than moving the story.
that got me really frustrated the way they handled that. And I was like, I get it. You know, you think people who are buying, and you know what? There may be a lot of people that buy Dr. Aphra but just to get Dr. Aphra. But like, if I'm picking up everything, that made it really annoying to read.
Yeah.
So I liked the old days where like you missed out, you freaking missed out, man. You know,
And it mattered more.
it
Like,
did matter
it
more.
seemed like every issue had, like, mattered. Whereas
Right.
now, they put out an event, and then they put all the supplementary titles in their own mini series. And you might get, like, two that matter. I guess it could be, if you read the main series, you get the gist of the whole thing. But
Right.
there might be, like, one or two that hit with you, like, I wouldn't have known that, you know, like, that's kind of a big deal.
Right.
You know, but they didn't all like feel like you needed to have, you know, have them all. I
Right.
mean, the latest one that I think they've done well, and I know you're not into it, is the Gang War.
Yeah.
The way they did that one is they set it like subdivided New York with all the gang members, and then they focused each mini series on that portion of town, and
Right.
they all seem to like meld together well, you know, like, okay, Shang-Chi's over here, and Tombstone is in here, and the way it led from the wedding, it was kind of really well, like, that was the first one I read in a long time where it felt like every miniseries, like, I had to read it because it was like it flowed well, kind of like in the
Gotcha.
Superman Batman days.
Right. Well, that's the way it should be, because the way I always think, I guess maybe kind of like you might have a villain. Okay, let's go back to Man of Steel. Let's say I can't remember. Was it White Rabbit? Was that her name? I
White
can't remember.
Rabbit, I thought, was the Amazing Spider-Man villain.
Okay, what was the name of the, well, anyway, so there was a one woman who was gun running. I can't remember what her name was, and you would have
It might be her. I'm
you
getting
had.
her confused with.
Let's see. I'll do Superman, Man of Steel, a White Rabbit. But anyway, you would have her gun running thing going on, and
Yeah, White
yep.
Rabbit's the Marvel one, right? But does she have a counterpart?
There is a counterpart. There's White Rabbit was a weapons dealer operated out of Metropolis, Angora Lappin. So you would have like the stuff going on with the return of Superman, you know, like in the main Daily Planet scenes, but then the White Rabbit storyline would only be in Man of Steel, so it would push the story along, but it would also have its own little thing going as well. So, you know, or like, what was the other thing they were really, really big in on? They did a lot of Cadmus stuff and the cellar or the sewer dwellers and Bibbo in Man of Steel. Like Bogdanovich, he must have really liked to draw
Inner
Bibbo.
Gang,
Yep.
Bibbo. Well, Inner Gang was mostly Ordway, right?
I think that was Ordway, yeah.
Yeah.
But and that's how it would work. You would have like certain things like would be in certain people's books, but you would have like the Daily Planet and the return of overarching in each one. So it did push the story forward, but there was also a bonus to actually following Man of Steel or Action or whatever. So yeah. And that sounds like what you're saying Gang War is doing too. Like
Yeah,
it's
I almost did a Superman read for today because I have this unusual stack of Superman comics
Yeah.
that my brother-in-law gave me, which I already had. Like, he gave them to me because they came from Eric Palicki's collection, I think it was, which was I you know the one actress that's in Friday Night Lights and
Yep.
his sister was selling his comics or something like that, and he wanted something from her.
Right.
He didn't want the comics, and he says, "Well, you can have the comics." I almost read some of those just for the hell of it. Even though
That's
I had
funny.
them in boxes below, they're by my bedstand.
I always think it's fun when you have something from somebody's collection like that, though. That always makes it interesting because
Yeah.
it's like got a unique history. I have the weirdest thing. So, and somebody mentioned it on when I posted the pic this morning. You know, about the grease pencil marks on a book. It's so weird. So this comic was bought from my comic shop because it came. I picked it up at Half Price Books for $3, and it had the My Comic Shop sticker on it, with the grade and everything. But then you look at it, and it's got in grease pencil 2/18/21. So that means somebody in 2021 was still marking a book on the front of it. And I was
That's
just like,
pretty old, late to be doing a grease pencil, isn't it?
that's what I thought.
I thought the grease pencils were the 80s and the 70s.
That's what I thought too. I just thought that was so weird. So I'm like, what is the history of this book? That's just bizarre to me because it went
I sometimes wonder that.
because it
So
went
like
from
I'll like dig into some obscure book and I was like, "Man, I wonder who read this before."
right? So this was in the last 4 years has obviously gone from some secondhand bookseller to my comic shop to Half Price Books to my house. So just in what, 3 years, it's changed hands at least 4 times. I think that's fun. That's so weird to
Yeah.
me.
Well, I'm sure it happens a lot.
Oh, I'm sure it does. But I mean, it was, I mean, it's not a spectacular issue, but for what it is, it's not bad. So weird. I have fun when you go into those places because they'll have stuff sometimes way overpriced, and sometimes they don't know what they have and they'll have it underpriced, and you're like,
Well, that's what I was always like. I just recently got the first appearance of Scooby-Doo, and that one's hard to track down. It's
right.
very expensive.
I bet.
Like I spent $350 for a really shitty copy, and that's cheap. I
Right.
mean, that's $100 or $200 cheaper than you normally can get it.
Right.
And I always thought like, I thought I could get a Flintstones, and I thought I could get a Jetsons. But I didn't think I'd ever get the Scooby-Doo for what I wanted it. And I
Right.
said, if you ever find it, Mike, you're going to find it in an antique store where nobody knows that Scooby-Doo is expensive. Like,
Right.
there's not too many collectors, like, even that you can talk to now that would be, I mean, most of our inner circle would know that Scooby-Doo's expensive.
Right.
But a lot of other people don't know. They think Spider-Man or, like, a Marvel or DC, and then
Right.
all the other stuff's a funny book, right? They don't care.
Exactly.
So I thought for sure if I was ever going to score a copy of Scooby-Doo number one, it would have been, at an antique store or something that didn't know what they had.
Right.
But I got one.
That's awesome.
I got a Scooby-Doo number one and a Flintstones first appearance. So now I just need to track down the Jetsons and I
And then you're
scored.
gonna go obscure. You're gonna want like the first Top Cat, the first
Well, I have the first Tasmanian Devil
Nice.
I'm bidding on it, and then I was doing the first appearance of Ronald McDonald. That one came out of nowhere,
That's
and
fun.
I picked that one up.
I remember I saw the cover for that and I was like, man, he looked weird.
Yeah, and then the first appearance of the Beverly Hillbillies.
Nice.
Yeah.
I was in a place in Peoria and there were so many kid comics in just such bad shape where I like it made me like sad to even have to touch them to flick through them. They were in that bad of shape or
Yeah.
like little Lulus and stuff. And I'm like, if y'all would,
G's are worse.
yeah, if they were just in a little bit better condition, I would have grabbed them. But they were literally the covers, if they were there, were disintegrating. And I was like,
Yeah.
I couldn't
Or
bring
they had
myself to
like
do it.
little mice chews or whatever on the
Yes.
corners. Like that's the one thing I can't stand is like, everybody has their pet peeves of damage. I
Right.
don't like spillage, like big water stains.
Yeah.
I don't like mold, and I hate I hate like if there's like mice
Right. Or
chewing on it,
bugs.
yeah, or bugs, yeah.
Yeah. I had in my hands Adele from 1945, I think, and I was flipping in it and I was like, why is this so cheap? And it was because the back half of it was just gnawed up and I was like, I can't do it. It was
Yeah,
too gross.
there's certain things that are disgusting. I
Yeah,
mean
they
like, and
are.
it's like I just can't do it. But
Rusty staples
you're
bug
like,
me if they start to spread too, because it almost looks like mold where they get so rusted they start to turn the insides like all that brown, and I don't like
yeah.
that either.
Oxidization or whatever, the
Yep,
foxing.
that foxing, if it gets too gross, I sometimes I can't handle that either. I'll read them.
I'm not too bad. The mold really bothers me.
Oh, I don't mess with mold.
The
That's straight up.
smell also, like if it smells like gasoline, I don't want, even though there I've heard all kinds of remedies, like put it in an ice box
Yeah.
with baking soda and all kinds of, they're like, you can get the smell out. I just don't want to do it.
Oh my God, I told you about the one time somebody put a Valiant book in like some kitty litter, and the problem was it got stuck to the book. I'm like, ugh.
Oh,
I threw that crap
God.
in the recycling because I'm like, I don't know if this
Yeah.
was actually used kitty litter or what. I was gr so grossed out. It
Yeah,
was
that's nasty.
I still need to get that issue. I think it was number two of Predator versus Magnus because mine got kitty littered. Oh, that's funny. That's good.
Yeah.
No, it's not good stuff. The story's good, but the actuality's disgusting. But yeah, I had an Agatha Christie novel I picked up this week, and it looked really good. And then I got home, and there was some red flecks in it. I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. So I
What's
dusted it up.
red flex? I don't know what that is.
It can be a bed bug sign. So
What does it look like?
it'll just be like little dots, because it's basically dried blood.
Oh, really?
So it heads like right in the crease between the cover and the pages on the front and the back. So I've sealed it up, and once it's sat sealed for about a month, I'll take it out and see what I think of it. But at the because I was like, man, that's not cool. Because you if it's bed bugs, you do not want that.
Oh yeah, I imagine.
Because it'll be like, yeah, it'll be like either rust or like little flecks of red, and I'm just
But
like,
see, I
ugh.
wouldn't have known that. So
Yeah,
like,
I learned
I
that
would
because of
have
working at the
just,
library.
yeah,
Yeah,
that's interesting.
because that's one of
You're
the
gonna
first
have to
things you
teach me
check
some
for.
of those tricks, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think the main thing you would have that you might run into it with is if you were buying used trades, I would say be careful. If you see like bunches of dots on the end, if they're red, that might be one you want to make sure that it's safe. Because once you get bed bugs in the house, man, you got to basically nuke everything to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that really kills them is heat, I think.
Yeah.
So, no bed bugs, please.
Just
I get
talking about
scared
all
of them
these
enough that
comic
some.
flaws.
Right. I get scared enough of them that sometimes I don't even want to like bring a book home from work, you know, because I'm like, oh,
Yeah.
this one looks like it's not in good shape. I don't know if I'm
Right.
even going to take it into my house. So, because people be like, oh, you don't need to buy a book. You can read it from the library. And I'm like, some of those books at the library are not in great shape, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So I do a little bit of both. But anyway, do you want me to cover a book?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. You want Whitman, Charlton, or DC first?
Let's do Whitman.
All right, this was a weird one. It's called Shroud of Mystery, and from what I could catch, it was just one off, and it's a bunch of really short stories. It's a 60 center from 1982. It's got a cyclops holding a couple of, I guess they're Greek because it says Ulysses. It says Ulysses caught in the clutches of a cyclops. So the first story is called What If? And it has a giant beam of light landing in a desert, and some people are watching, and something's coming out of it, and it's these really strange-looking aliens with humongous noggins. So they come out and says, "Do not fear, we come as friends. But where are you? Where are you from?" And they say basically they were on this planet, and it got a really bad infection, and everybody started dying out, so they had to leave. So they came to Earth. So they were the last of their people who were safe. And they're like, okay. So basically, I love this. There's like four random people out in the middle of the desert who allow aliens to come into the world. Like that would actually be who would decide who would allow the aliens that they could live peacefully in the U.S. But whatever. So they build up these places. They grow some weird alien fruits. And a couple of years later, this guy died. And they're like, what's wrong with him? And there's one of the aliens. He says, I fear the answer lies with us. Even though we're now immune, we may have passed on the disease. And what we're going to do is going to go build a wall and stay behind it. And one of the guys is like, a wall, that's not good enough. No, sirree, we want you off our planet. And they're like, no, promise, just give us one chance. If we go somewhere else, we may not survive. And it ends with them going, do you think that's enough protection? If he's wrong, we can die. But if they leave, they all die. And then it ends with what if, dot, dot, dot. So...
It's a weird you know what's weird about this book is I always thought Whitman was reprints,
right?
Like I don't know. This is the first book I've ever seen where you don't see another logo on it, and the Whitman right. being the cheaper version that you'd find in a bag or something,
right?
Like that's unusual.
I think what may have happened, and the only reason I think that is because there's some like Al Williamson stuff in here too, and I'm wondering if at that point, because Golki had pretty much come off the newsstands by 82, I think, I could be wrong, I wonder if they had like inventory stories and maybe a handful of like new stuff they just would slap together and then put in the bags, because this wouldn't have been sold on a newsstand. This would have been in a bag with two other comics, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, I would think.
Yeah, so I wonder if it's like old inventory stuff, because I'm telling you, this is the weirdest freaking book. So the next one's called Two Predictions, and it's in 1790. There's some guys out going around on their horses, and they're like, hey, there's a house. So they go to the house, and there's this lady in there, and she says, I've drawn a magic circle, come here, I'll tell you your future. And so she tells them their future, and one of them she sees falling off a cliff, and another one the father looks dead, and they're like, well, if we go now, can we prevent that from happening? She's like, sure. So the one jumps on his horse and he falls off, and he's like, oh, I was going to fall off a cliff. Well, I better not move. So he stays there all through the night hanging onto this tree, and then he wakes up the next morning. He's like, oh, look, I was right on the edge of the cliff. If I had moved, I would have fallen off and died. Thank goodness for that gypsy or whatever. And then this other guy, he goes home, and he's worried that his father is going to die before he gets to see him. But because she told him to get there as quickly as possible, he sees him right before he passes away. So it turns out, dun, 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 that she helped him see his dad. So just a really weird story, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the entire story. And there's like five of these. It's such a weird book. So the next one is called The Stone Astronomers. And it's the typical, you know, British fella, stiff upper lip in Africa, and he's talking to some person in Mali, and he's telling about these ancient visitors that came many, many years ago, and the high priest is telling him the story about it. He's like, what are these people called? He's like, they were called Nomos. And he's like, what are they? Well, they kind of look like seals. And he said many years ago that his tribesmen were down by the water, and a giant thing landed there, and out of it came two men who looked like seals, and they were named Nomus. And that's literally the entire story. Is he's like, oh, do you think this is real? And it's just you guys listening to this weird story and saying, well, it sounds like they're from Sirius 9 or some planet. Was it Sirius 9? I don't remember now. Anyway, so basically, the gist of it, he hears this story, and he goes, he talks to his friend, and goes, like, that sounds like this planet that we can see the light of. And he's like, oh, must have been. So he thinks these seal people are out running around, because that's how far they would have had to have come because of the the way light travels. These
Right.
stories are so weird. All right, the next one's called Flight of Fancy. There's a guy, and this is the Al Williamson one, so it looks absolutely gorgeous. He's in a plane, and he starts sputtering out. He lands the plane, and there's like a knight and a damsel in distress. And she's like, help, help! And he goes and fights the knight and flips him off his horse. She's like, I live in a castle. And he's like, I'll take you there. So he takes her to the castle. And he, you know, meets the king and says, I helped this damsel. And I'm going to be leaving now. And they say, no, you can't leave. And he's like, why can't I leave? Because you have to fight a dragon. And so they throw him in a basement and make him fight this dragon. And so they at least gave him a sword. So he's fighting this dragon, and he looks at it and he says, hey, there's something going on. This thing has an electric spark. So you see its eyeball, and it has like a little lightning bolt in it. He says, okay, there's only one way to find out. And he just happens to immediately find the panel that opens the robot dragon's back. And so he stabs the sword down into this robot dragon's back and kills it, or turns it off, whatever. And he goes, okay, your majesty, what's the story? He's like, oh, the story is we were rich and bored, so we wanted to build an ancient kingdom to live. So all these millionaires now live here acting like they're playing, you know, medieval times. And he's like, he's like, okay. So he gets in his plane, and they're like, please don't tell anybody. And he's leaving, and he says, they don't have anything to worry about. I would never give away their secret and still be able to live with myself. And the final story, I don't remember this one super well. Oh, no, my God, there's two more stories, Mike. There's like, these stories are like 3 and 4 pages a piece. I don't remember this one super great, other than this guy's in a castle in Scotland. This one's called The Red Lady, and it's a ghost, and it warns him that there's fire coming. And he goes to bed that night after dinner, and of course there's a fire. And he sees a guy, he's like, I saw this lady, she told me there was going to be a fire. And he's like, oh yeah, that's because she's the ghost of the lady who woke up Mary Queen of Scots. And that's the story.
Sounds like they're crazy stories.
They're really weird, and they're like 4 or 5 pages a piece. I don't even know how many.
What made you get this? Was this something you saw at the store?
Yeah, this was at Half Price Books. I think it was like a buck 50. And if I have a rule, and it's the price has gone up now. But, you know, in the old days, if the 50 cent bin, if I saw a Bronze Age book and I was even slightly intrigued, I bought it. And now it's a little more now. If I see something under $2 that's weird and it's Bronze Age, I pretty much get it. You know? Especially like old Whitmans or old Gold Keys. Actually, it doesn't even have to be weird anymore. I think two other ones I picked up were like Andy Panda and a Walt Disney comics. Just because, like I said, it's getting harder and harder to find kid comics, even in bad shape, much less good shape. So
it's interesting that you mentioned Andy Panda, because I've been searching for the first appearance of Woody Woodpecker.
Nice.
It is. I don't think I'm going to get it. I didn't realize how old it was.
Is it from the 40s?
Yeah, it's from the 40s.
Yeah, that's probably a Dell, I'm guessing. But yeah, this is. But yeah, if I see a Whitman at this point and it was in the buck 50 stack, I'm like, okay, I'm getting it. Anything like there was a buck 50 that was like from the 80s or earlier this weekend.
Yeah, there's two versions of this one. There's the white left hand corner Whitman and the yellow left hand corner Whitman. Which one do you have?
I have the yellow one.
Okay, you have the less expensive one.
Well, it was plenty cheap, I tell you. It was $1.50. And there's the last story, The Isle of One-Eyed Giant.
Well, I do like the cover a lot, though. It looks like a giant playing with two toy Roman soldiers.
Right? Yeah, and that's finally what the last story is the it's that story is some Cyclopses have Cyclopes. I don't know. Anyway, he's captured Ulysses on his way home, and the way they get him get loose is they get him drunk, and then they jab him in the eyeball, which I don't like that. And so they see some sheep, they hide underneath the bellies of the sheep and sneak out, and the Cyclops throws a rocket as they sail away. The end. Really weird comic.
Short stories.
Yeah.
Very short.
The art's good. It's just one of those weird oddities. I think I mentioned this on Twitter to somebody. It feels like a book from the 70s. It feels out of time to have read something like this in the 80s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why I wonder if it's like inventory stories from like maybe their UFO or Grimm's or one of their other comics they had that did kind of like weird stuff. Because it does, there's no rhyme or reason to the stories. They don't really go together. But it's fine. I thought it was fun because it was weird.
Made you laugh for sure.
It did. So yeah, I would say if you find that one cheap, I'd say grab it.
Yeah, I would if I saw it for $1.50.
Most definitely.
Yep. So I'm gonna talk about the Flintstones season 1 episode 9. It's called The Engagement Ring. This one was a really, really good one. It's Barney finally get so I assume I don't know if this is a good assumption, but I assume that Barney's married to Betty and Wilma's married to Fred.
Right.
But I guess they never gave them engagement rings, or they had any wedding rings. I is what the way I gather. So Barney decides to get Betty an engagement ring, even though they're already married, and or else they're living in sin. That would even be worse.
Be funnier.
You got two couples living in sin. That's why they didn't have Pebbles and Bam Bam. They were waiting.
Right.
I guess. He decides to get her this nice engagement ring, and it puts him out. Like Barney's, if you watch enough Flintstones and you learn about the Rubbles, Barney's all heart. Like Barney does everything with every good intention in his soul, and Fred takes advantage of him. Like, totally,
Right.
and sometimes blames him for things that he shouldn't be blamed for. But he gets a wedding ring, and he's like, I want to surprise Betty, and I need you to hide it for me. So he gives it to his best buddy ever, Fred. And Fred decides, huh, I'm gonna, where can I hide this so Wilma doesn't see it? And he hides it in the flour. I don't know why he would do that. Like, that seems, what if she starts cooking? He's like, man, Wilma hasn't cooked in a long time, and we have all this pastry stuff around and bread. Why the hell would she go into the flour? So I'm gonna hide the ring in the flour. Well, he hides it into the flour, and next thing he's watching TV and he hears like a blender, or not a blender, but a mixer. And he's like, oh shit, what is she doing with the mixer? And she's making a cake, and she's like making a cake, and he's like, oh no, I gotta. So he like tries to draw Wilma away from the flour and the cake so he could take the ring. And she starts baking it and putting it in the oven, and he's like, oh man, he's gonna cook the ring. So he goes to get it, and Wilma's like, why are you trying to get a cake you don't even want? Because he's like, I'm trying to lose weight. I don't want you to bake the cake, because he knows the ring's in there. So she gets mad. And she takes the cake and she says, well, you don't want to eat it, so I'm going to take it out there. And she throws it in the trash. And Fred is like, oh, I'll just go get it out of the trash. And Wilma says, the luckiest thing came by. The guy picked up the trash as I was throwing it. So he's like, oh shit. The ring is now in the cart of trash. He has to like hunt it down and find it in the trash. So he puts on a mask and holds up the garbage man so he could go dig through the trash and find
Oh my
the ring.
God.
And he finds it, which is amazing. So he finds the ring in the cake and then takes it back home and cleans it off. And it's like, man, I gotta still hide it for Barney. Where am I gonna put it? Oh, I know, I'll put it in a bowling ball. Because Wilma is not gonna go in the bowling ball. It'll be in one of these holes. But Wilma goes by and he has it on the top shelf. Like, I don't know who would store a bowling ball on the top shelf of a closet with no bag. Like, so this ball can roll off and just hit somebody on the head. But anyway, Fred leaves the door open to the closet. Well, Wilma's there and she's like, "What the hell? What, Fred, damn it, you leave the closet door open?" She slams the door, the ball falls off the top shelf, lands there, she sees the ring and she's like, "Oh my God, Fred's getting me a ring finally." So it's like, holy shit. So she goes and tells Betty, she's like, "Oh my God, look at this ring that Fred has got me." So you're like, holy crap. Now Barney's ring that he paid a fortune for and he's going to owe for the next 10 years of his life is now in Wilma's hands. And then she's like, "I'm making you a great dinner, Fred, blah, blah, blah." And then Fred tells his buddy, like, oh man. I can't tell Wilma the truth. I gotta let her have the ring. And
Right.
Barney's like, "Well, what are we gonna do? That's not your ring. That's Betty's ring." He says, "Well, go get you another one." And he's like, "Well, how are we gonna pay for this?" So they go. Fred says, "I'll pay for it." So then it's like an even Steven thing, right? They both their women have rings, and everybody's happy, but. They go to check his credit score, right? They go to check Fred's credit
I
score,
love
and they're
they have the
like,
credit score too.
"Yeah, we can't sell you a ring. You owe so much for everything else,
It's
and you
funny.
never pay your bills. What are we gonna do?" So he can't get the ring, and he's like, "Oh shit! Oh, there's a fight tonight. If you stay in the ring with Muggs McGee, or I don't know who the hell the guy was called, for 1 minute." You will win the amount of the ring.
Right.
So then they go, and he's like, "Oh, I just, Barney, you gotta do this. You gotta go in the ring." He's like, "Why don't you go in the ring?" He's like, "No, you could do it. You could survive 1 minute." So he puts Barney in the ring with this. Meanwhile, the girls think that Barney's going into the ring in order to pay for the ring that he got Betty. So they go and they, she goes, "I've been saving my entire life to do this," but they go to pay off the manager to let him survive 5 minutes in the ring or whatever, a minute in the ring. And the manager takes the money, but then he's like, "Oh, you can knock the crap out of him." So he takes the ring, I mean, takes the money, and then he, Barney gets in there and he gets clobbered, like almost. To death. And then the women realize, oh man, this manager did us wrong, right?
Right.
So they go after him. They knock out the guy that knocked out Barney. Like, Betty just lets him have it, man. Like, she just clocks him, and then she's getting ready to clock the manager, and he goes, "No, you could have your money back. Plus, I'll go back." And he says, "Only if you go and tell Barney that he made the time limit and give him his money."
Right.
Then they both end up with rings. So Wilma has a ring, and then and Barney, Betty has a ring. But it's just a hilarious episode.
I tell you, those old Hanna-Barbera, they're tough to beat.
Yeah.
We watched one at the library the other day that was the original appearance of Scooby-Dee. Do you remember her?
Scooby-Dee, I didn't remember. I thought Scooby-Dee was the one with the buck teeth.
That's Scooby-Dumb.
Okay, that's okay. I don't know Scooby-Dee. I don't, that doesn't
So
ring a bell.
she's like a white Great Dane, and it's such a weird episode. I wouldn't get super into it. But she's like an actor. So she's like a dog actor, and basically they're gonna kidnap her if she keeps doing this movie she's doing. Scooby Dumb and Scooby Doo are her cousins, but the entire episode they keep trying to get her to kiss them, and I'm just like, it's so weird. I'm like, y'all are supposed to be like related, and your whole thing is like, well, we don't have Scooby snacks, but Scooby D will kiss you, and she's like, my hero, and the whole time I was like, it's so weird. I love old Hanna-Barbera shows. It's fun
That's
stuff.
cool that they have that thing for at the library.
Oh
That's
yeah.
unusual.
Yeah,
I'm
we're
sure they have lots of like events. Like I've never taken advantage of the library, mostly because I haven't had to, right?
Right.
But When I'm retired, I'm sure I will turn to the library if I need to like be a little more frugal on finances, for
Well,
sure.
I don't know what they have in your area, but I know like some places we don't have it. We have a different digital reading system, but there's some places where like Hoopla
Yeah.
and they have like access to just tons and tons of graphic novels and
Oh,
comics.
that's the way Chris reads for this show. He reads most of his stuff on Hoopla.
I think that's awesome though. I wish we had it, but it's fine. No big deal. I get plenty of stuff to read just by the way I read stuff. So let's see what we got next. I guess I'll do this is a Charlton Group comic from, what year is this from? This is from 1978. It's The Many Ghosts of Dr. Graves. I did the classic Crawford where I'm like, I'm not going to check the database. I'm just going to grab stuff. And, I got 2 issues of The Many Ghosts of Dr. Graves, and one of them I already had. But luckily, I have kids who like comics, so I just gave it to Jack. But this one I didn't have, and this is number 64. I think it's wild that this series ran that long. That,
It is. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't have too many Charlton, but my library is growing because I am seeking them out a lot.
they don't age well, because I think whatever they use to print these, like they yellow really bad.
Oh, they were notorious for bad paper, bad printing, bad editing, and everything, because there were two criminals that basically met in jail and just and got and somehow found a printing press and decided to make a bunch of comics. But bless them, man, they really expanded their, I mean, they licensed a ton of stuff
Oh, they
away
did.
from competitors and everything. I mean, they did a lot of comics for sure.
I only have a couple of Scooby-Doos, period. I have one Laugh Olympics from Marvel, and I think I have one Gold Key, and then I have one of the Charltons. So,
Yeah.
I get excited like any of the old Charltons. That's another one. If I find them, couple of bucks, I usually just grab them. And most of the time I don't have it, but this just happened to be one of the rare times like I actually had it. And I was like, well, maybe it won't be the modern one, it'll be the regular one. But like, no, I had them
Well,
all.
I think the Charlton fan base is growing, and I don't know if it's because of Tomorrow's or
Could be.
the Charlton Arrow that's on Facebook or any of that stuff, but they are going up in price. Like, I don't know if it's because of poor conditions too, like, just having bad copies of everything, but yeah, they are moving up, and I've noticed a big difference having bought some that they're getting quite expensive. They used to be nothing. They used to be, I could find this in $2 bin,
Oh,
like,
definitely.
yeah.
I think the last time I was in Nebraska, and his store was very much run by like whatever Overstreet says or whatever eBay, like his stuff was not cheap. I was going through, you could still get a lot of the war books cheap. You could still get some of the Westerns cheap. The stuff that has really gotten hard to get cheap now is the romance books. Like there were almost no romance comics that were inexpensive. Everything was like, I'm like beat up Red to Death. Charlton's and DC's were like $6, $7.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's just, did those just get thrown away? Did they get kept? I don't know, but those are really, I feel like that stuff you used to could get for next to nothing, and they're getting harder and harder to find, and if you do, you can't get them for a good price.
Yeah, we went to a romance comic panel that was very interesting, and the author had wrote books. I actually bought them. 'Cause she did like the history of Archie characters in comics, like everything, not just Archie, but that type of genre, and then the history of romance novels. And It was a fascinating panel, and I always pick up romance novels because they just crack me up.
Oh
It
yeah, they're good.
is so, no matter what company I get something out of the romance novels because it just, if it's not the Dear Abby in the back or some of the stories that just has some bizarre time, a place in time that think people are treated differently, especially women.
Right.
It is just nuts. I mean, it's
Yeah.
crazy.
Well, and there's a lot of gross age differences, or like I'm
Oh
hot,
yeah,
like
we're
a
talking
lady will be
about
all hot pants
15
for
year of
teacher,
old
and
or
just
yeah.
oh, stuff that's like weird and inappropriate.
That I notice a lot more now than I did back then because it's more prevalent, like at least in terms of noticing it, age differences, right?
Most
But like
definitely.
I think back then it wasn't as bad.
Well, it definitely wasn't as looked down upon.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's see. We're doing Charlton, Dr. Graves, 64. This is from March of 78. My wife hadn't even been born yet. So the first one is called The Link, and it's got a woman, and she's in kind of like a tank top and skirt, and she's like, "I know you must be hungry, but my caro mio, you must be patient. A steam launch is coming upriver this afternoon." So she's got some guy in a cage, and these two guys, when the steam launch lands, get there, and they're talking to each other, and he's, "There's the Dame Sven. She's got millions." And he goes, "She is dark, Joe. Such women are always attracted to men such as I." What does that mean? She's like a white lady with who's a brunette. I don't know what that means. She is dark. But anyway, she takes him home. She wines him and dines him. She goes back into her laboratory and she says, "Are you hungry, my darling?" And so now we see the guy in the cage, and he—I don't know if it's supposed to be like a Dr. Hyde or a werewolf situation—but he's like, "Argh." And she's like, "Pierre, behave. I'm working on a serum. Soon you will be cured." And so she's trying to get a serum ready to give to Pierre. But in the meantime, she's fattening up these two guys that just got off the launch. So she puts them in their rooms for the night, and she lets Pierre out of his cage. He goes into her room, and one of the guys who had been in the boat goes, "Hey, the door opened. Somebody's in the room." And you hear blam, blam. And the other guy wakes up and says, "Hey, that's Riviera. Let me out. Let me out." And she's like, "Go back to sleep. That was just an animal. How could an animal shoot a gun?" That
I
doesn't
don't
even
know.
make sense. But anyway, so the next morning, Pierre's in the cage. She's like, "The serum is going to be ready soon." And she goes to bed. And the next morning, Pierre is back to normal. And he goes and tells the other guy in the house, like, "You are in great danger. Please leave and get out of this place quickly." And so the one guy leaves. The friend, I guess, is just dead. I mean, last we saw him, he was just sitting in Pierre's cage, so I don't know what happened. So anyway, Pierre goes into his girlfriend, wife's, lover's, whatever's room, and she says, "Pierre, darling, I've been so long." And he goes, "I waited a long time too, Inez." And you see him, and he's like straight up vampire. So she gave him a cure, but it wasn't a very good one. So he went from being like a wolf man or a Hulk or something to being a vampire. So there you go. Her experiment was a failure. And now she's about to die. I think it was nice that he let the one guy out. I'm like, I would have figured he would have ate him, but whatever. Okay, next story is Dazzling Lights. And this one is about Jiggs Maloney in his diesel cab. "Move over, I'm rolling now. Beep, beep." So, this guy's like a real jerk. So, his whole shtick is he likes to run people off the road.
And he's a driver?
He's a truck driver, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, you see this old couple, and they're like, "The drivers of those big trucks always give you the right of way." Except for, Jiggs Maloney here. "Here, Timid Thomas is out late tonight." And the guy driving the car goes, "Why doesn't he just pass me? He shook up already. I'm going to race my engine and get up real close and give him a full blast with the horn." So he like honks the horn at him, and the old guy, who's like 63 years old, of course gets scared and crashes his car. And then Jigs goes, ha ha ha, that old man totaled it out. I'm bigger than anybody when I'm behind the wheel. So it turns out he's a person of small stature. So he gets out and he goes to the truck stop to get something to eat. There's this old geezer. He's like, hey, Alma, look at the shrimp who driving that big truck we just passed. Ain't that a riot? He says, keep on talking, blubbergut. I'll remember you and your car when we meet again. So Jigs goes in and the lady's like, you want a steak, Jigsy? He's like, no, Blubbergut and his missus have left. Where are they headed? Idaho, I think. So I'll just take a piece of pie. So he eats the pie real quick, jumps back in his car. He's like, well, if I do 80 miles an hour, I'll catch up with old Blubbergut. So he sees the guy. And he's like, I'll teach those jokers not to mess with me. So he heads straight for them. And the old guy in the car's like, he's a maniac. Oh, my God. And he drives off a cliff. So he's like straight up committed murder at this point. He's not just like running people off the road.
It's like the early version of Joyride.
It is.
Candy cane?
You don't mess with Jigsy, dude.
I wonder if it is inspired by this comic book.
You never know. But he's like, that creep, he thought I was going to move over. Ha ha, that'll be the day. So he's back at his trucking company and, he's talking to his boss. He's like, you take route 22 West, Jigsy? Did you see that car? He's like, yeah, it did. Well, take route 22 East this time. He's like, I'd rather use the southern route, Mr. Morse. He's like, nope, go. I want you to take 22. And he's like, ah, fine. So he's going the opposite direction of the guy he just left. He's like, well, I ain't superstitious. That guy is dead. He can't bother me now. And along, he's like, this is screwy. Patches of ground fog like that night. And he sees, like, these lights around his head, almost like you would think, like, you see when somebody's supposed to be drunk in a comic. He goes, it's him, look out! He said, I thought it was going to be a head-on collision. And so he's seeing stuff. And he gets back up on the road. He's like, these stupid curves, I can't see anything with this fog. The lights, I can't see! Ah! And, of course, old Jigsy goes off the hill. Two cops show up. He's like, did you see that? He drove right through the fence. Like he was blinded by lights, but that couldn't have happened. We had it closed to westbound traffic. How do they know we saw lights and ran off the car? I thought that was weird, but whatever. So yeah, Jigsy got his. So that was a fun one. And then the last one, I wouldn't swear to it, but boy, it sure looks like a Steve Ditko. Just the Ditko draws. Nobody looks like him. And I think he did a lot of Charlton in this era. I bet it is a Ditko. All right, so this one's called This Dog Howls for You, and it's about old Cletus and his dog. Old Cletus' dog ain't a howling at our gate. I'm confused. Okay, so the old guy's Cletus, and he's got a dog. Got it. And then Jim Bowden's is the guy who's dying. Okay, that's what it was. That's what happens. You read all these stories, they start getting mixed up in your head, and you're like, who was Cletus? Who was the dog? Who's Jim Bowden? I don't remember. Anyway, so there's this guy dying, and while this guy's dying, the dog starts howling, and there's a young couple like, I wish that dog would shut up, and they're like, Jim had a right bad heart, Leonie, that's just the dog howling, that might have killed him. So they get there, and Jim Bowden's dead, and then we see Cletus and his dog, and they're next to a grave, and he says, Rest easy, Stella. Ain't nobody gonna build a road through here. So it turns out this young couple's trying to build a road, and this Cletus fella won't sell his house so that they can build a road. So they're going up to his house one last time to talk him into building the road. He's like, I ain't building no road. You ain't getting rid of my house. I'm staying by Stella for the rest of my life. And the dog starts howling, and you have the weird cover image that's on the cover of the dog howling over a skull. It's just weird. That's some Ditko shit right there. So turns out he's like, well, I don't know what to do, but we got to get this house, this road built. So he goes back to the house one last time. I'm going to talk to Cletus and get him to get that dog to shut up. So he hears howling, which is funny because I hear my dogs barking right now. And he goes in the house, and there's a dog of a skeleton's dog in the corner. Skeleton dog, dog, skeleton dog in the corner. He's like, that's weird. Oh, Cletus should be in the bedroom. So he goes in the bedroom, and he finds Cletus's Skillet. He said, "Oh, you must have been lonely a long time, Cletus." So he goes and he digs a hole. And I just love how, like, Ditko keeps inserting Dr. Graves' head. So, like, just randomly, like, it'll be a panel of a guy with a Dr. Graves' head will just be, like, in the air in the distance. The lady gets there, the one who was part of the young couple. So the younger guy is digging the hole, and she comes up. "Darling, it's getting late. If we hurry, we'll be out of here before dark." "Don't you worry, Leonie. Old Cletus and that dog are both inside the house, dead." And so he tells her to go to town, let everybody know. And then you see Dr. Graves again, and he's like, "1 hour later, three men ventured in, and they helped put him into a box." So they put the old fella in a box, and they put a dog in the other box, and they bury him next to Stella. And they're like, "Now that Cletus was with his wife again, I guess he won't care if I build a road." So basically, the dog and the guy get buried, and so now he's going to go knock down the guy's house. He doesn't worry about whether, like, there's relatives or anything. He's like, "Well, I buried his dead bones, so I can just go knock the house down now." And that's the end of the story, and it has Dr. Graves staring off into the distance. That's another one of these weird books that's pretty fun. The first story was kind of meh. I really like the Jigsy one, because, yeah, it's got that Joyride vibe. And that final story is fun, just because, like I say, it's got that weird Ditko art, and it's just kind of a weird story in general.
Yeah. But I like the truck driver one. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's a good one. But that's another one. Anytime I see any of those Charlton horror, I like them when they have the Tom Sutton covers, but you take what you get.
Yeah. I like truck driver comics, like, yeah. US One.
Oh my God,
and Phantom Road. Phantom Road is a recent one that's out now.
I've only read the first issue.
That is a truck driving comic book.
It was good, though. But I think the thing with the Charlton ones is a lot of times they don't always nail it. That's one thing I always noticed about the war comics. You know, DC would always have a nice moral or a nice wrap up. A lot of times you get those old Navy ones, and like that one story in here with the one guy who turns into a vampire at the end, they just stop.
Yeah. The Charltons are kind of flat. I mean, well, in this case, I think there's an exception. Those last two seem like they're pretty good.
They were pretty good.
But, like, especially in the war stories, they don't have, like a DC comic does.
No.
Well, DC did war better than anybody.
They did.
But, yeah, they seem more like straight, unemotional, flat stories with generic lettering and the one thing I don't like about Charlton is, like, the lettering. You can almost tell when you open up a comic book that it's Charlton by looking at the lettering.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah, and the word bubbles for sure. Just the shape.
I think it's funny. I used to really like EC lettering, but now as I get older, because it's so small and so tight, that's one of those lettering that I don't like anymore either. But I think both of them, those are the two books that I think of the most. It's like, you can tell if you're reading an EC book because it literally has that typewritten lettering. And yeah, you have that really tight, small lettering for Charlton as well.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it sucks getting old. I hate what it does to your eyeballs, man.
Yeah, it does. Well, I can't read with my glasses anymore. I have to take them off.
Me too. I can read on a tablet with my glasses, but if I'm looking at a comic, they always come off. And forget about it.
Well, my next pick is a Bond film.
Nice.
It's my first Sean Connery film, and it seems like way out of place. And now that I read a little bit about it, I understand why it's out of place, but it's Never Say Never Again.
Oh, the Thunderball remake.
Yeah, yep. And it was sort of filmed. The director is Irvin Kershner.
Mm-hmm.
Has Sean Connery as Bond, Kim Basinger as Domino, Klaus Maria Brodeur as Maximilian Largo, and it has Max von Sydow as the main villain, but he has about less than 5 minutes of screen time. I mean, I'm talking like maybe 3 minutes, max. There's Barbara Carrera, which I thought she was great. She was Fatima Bluche, and Bernie Casey, who I know as the Dean from Revenge of the Nerds.
Right.
He's the black president of that college. He plays Felix Leiter, who is I don't know much about James Bond outside of the what I've watched, but I do know I read the comic book. There's a James Bond Felix Leiter comic book
Right.
from Dynamite where that's a guy that worked with Bond.
Yep, that was kind of like his buddy, like the one guy that Indiana keeps teaming up with in Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Yep.
I didn't know this was a remake, to tell you the truth. Because I still have to watch Thunderball, which should be
Right.
interesting. Alex McKowan is Q. So like I'm not even familiar with their characters are so different. M is Edward Fox. So like this version of Bond, I know Rowan Atkinson, Mr. Bean is in this one.
I
He plays
forgot that.
a goofy dude that just gets information from for Bond. Pamela Salem is Miss Moneypenny. Moneypenny's in most of these movies.
Right.
I think this is a different actress though. Valerie Leon is a lady in Hama. She plays a key role, but it's a fun movie. I did some research on it just a little bit, and I found why does this feel out of place? Because it comes after the Roger Moore stuff, at least
Right.
most of it, and it's just there, and it doesn't have like your typical. When you have a Bond movie, you have that wonderful silhouette done opening where Bond is in shadow, and you have all these naked women dancing around to the
Right.
theme of the song. This has none of that. So it's very unusual that it's not there. But there's this organization called Spectre, very much like Austin Powers. Max von Sydow has a cat, and he's an evil villain that likes chaos. Like he likes blowing shit up and causing the world to always be in this chaotic mess, unless the United States pays him or the UN pays him like 10. I don't know if it's 20% of their every country's income. So he's gonna threaten them, and the way he threatens them is he has that one character Maximilian Largo steal two nuclear bombs. They basically steal it pretty unique. So I don't know if you've watched Superman 4 or Quest for Peace,
I
but.
haven't. That's the one I'm scared to watch.
There's a guy that I think he plays Steve Lombard,
Okay.
but he's the Superman sportscaster,
Right.
that was in the youth station. But in the movie Quest for Peace, he's a drunk and he's in love with Lana as she comes to Metropolis. You really should
Was he the
watch.
who was in the third one who was in love with her? Because when he goes to Smallville to get Lana, there's a kind of a like meathead former football guy that keeps running
Oh,
Lana.
maybe he is in the third one because you're right. He's the third. It is in my favorite Superman 3, my favorite Superman
I love
film.
Superman 3, yeah.
He's the drunk that goes
Yes,
back to
yes.
Metropolis. That's where they have the class reunion, right?
It is, yep. That's number
Okay,
three.
so that's the actor that plays Kim Basinger's brother in this one,
Oh,
and
yeah.
he works for the Air Force, but he has a terrible morphine or drug addiction and gambling problem that this Maximilian guy takes advantage of.
Yikes.
So he has an accident, and then he has an eyeball in his eye. So he can mimic the president's eyeball, And that's how they steal a nuclear. They basically take two warheads that were in a drill, plant the nukes in them, and then plop them into the ocean where they can get them later. So that they steal nuclear bombs that way.
Right.
And then Fantoma is Maximilian's like beautiful female killer that just goes out there and kills people for Maximilian. And she kills Steve Lombard. So she kills him, and they don't tell Kim Basinger because Maximilian's dating Domino, Kim Basinger.
Right.
And yeah, so they have these two nukes in the ocean that Maximilian's supposed to recover. And then James Bond is in a situation where M. It's like modern times and funding is different, and they have to get all these approvals. And Bond is sort of retired, like he's an older guy, and he's sort of just training younger agents. And he's even failing his own tests. Like they'll have him these real life tests where he's like in an adventure, and it's really a training session. And he sort of like doesn't want him out in the field anymore, but he gets captured. You know, this bomb gets captured, and they bring him out of sort of retirement to go retrieve the bomb. It has an interesting scene in there where Kim Basinger is like this casino, and Bond followers are in, and they have like 100 different games centipede in this room. It's just so bizarre. They're all centipede. There's one like. I don't remember what the game is called, but you used to have to like land. It wasn't like Lunar Lander, but it was something else. They have like one of those games and then like 100 centipedes, and people are paying them. And it's like a place where he's rich, Maximilian's rich, and he's taking donations for like a kids organization.
Right.
And he has this game that Bond has to play him, and it's got two controllers, and they're launching missiles. And they're betting like $60,000 a play,
Right.
but if you lose, it like shocks you at a certain level. Like it, and if you let go of the controllers, you lose entirely. So you have to fight through the pain, and the pain levels could get really high to where it could actually kill you.
Right.
So like Bond loses the first three rounds, and then they decide they're going for like Spain and France. They're fighting over this stuff. And then they have a final battle for the world, and Bond actually wins that. And he says, "Well, what you won? I can't remember. It's like $250,000." But he has that charitable donation, so he says, "Keep the money and let me have a dance with Domino." And that's when he kind of like tells Domino, "Your brother is really dead. You know, like he's leading you on and saying your brother's gonna arrive, but your brother's dead."
Right.
And then so Domino is threatened early on by Maximilian, like if she ever leaves him, he'll kill her. But there's such good scenes in this one. There's what was it? Fantoma was this under quotes, I think. Emma says to him at one time, because she almost kills him like three times, and she says, "You know that making love to Fantoma was the greatest pleasure of your life." And James Bond says, "Well, to be perfectly honest, there was a girl in Philadelphia." And Fantoma says, "Shut up," because Fantoma put like she almost killed him earlier underwater because they went like diving in the ocean. And she put like a transmitter on him that attracted sharks. Like he has this crazy shark scene where there's like six sharks trying to kill James Bond. And then she blow later on he meets a woman that's fishing. She fishes him out of the river, and then he has sex with her. And luckily he went to her room because she blew up his hotel room. And he's like, "Whoa, I guess I picked the right room in to have sex." And then, well, of course, he also gets Kim Basinger later, but that leads him to the end where he's gonna like launch a nuclear missile, and James Bond has to go and basically stop that bomb from being transmitted. But there's some really cool stuff. There's trivia. During this movie, a young Steven Seagal was the martial arts instructor for Sean Connery.
That's a
And
trip.
during a training, one day he got so angered with Sean Connery during the training session that he broke his wrist.
Yikes.
That's insane.
I've always heard he was not a nice dude.
Well, he's an asshole.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And then this film was produced by, it wasn't produced by MGM.
Right.
So I was like, what the hell is, like, usually I see the lion roar in a Bond film. I'm like, what the hell's going on? Well, this guy won a, that did the producer and co-writer of Thunderbolt, won a legal battle against Ian Fleming to make his own Bond movie, and that's how this movie came to be.
So weird.
And Rowan Atkinson's first movie, he later parried this in Johnny English films.
Oh yeah.
So there was a lot of interesting things to come out of this. There's a crazy massage scene where Sean Connery poses as a masseuse for Kim Basinger, and it's the most odd. I've never had a massage, but I'm gonna have to go to that scene and ask my wife, is this what a massage is about? Because that is weird.
That's funny.
This was a good movie.
I don't think I've seen it
It's
since the
highly
80s, so I don't
entertained.
remember it at all.
Yeah,
I'll have to
I was
rewatch it.
highly entertained. I've been very entertained by every movie I watched. Like,
Was this one on
I prefer
Max?
this one is on
Okay.
Max. Yeah, it's really good.
Well, hey, I got next weekend. Kristen's going to be out of town at a conference. Maybe I'll have to start the kids on some Bond movies.
It's odd because Sean Connery's older, like in this one, like, and I guess that's why he plays a retired. Now I gotta go watch Thunderball to see how close this is,
Right.
you know. That Phantoma is she's a great character in this movie.
I
They have a
remember really
great,
liking Thunderball. I think you're gonna like that one.
yeah, they have a great like motorcycle scene with Bond on a motorcycle. That's really cool. I like that one. And then the shark scene is really good.
Well, once you get to the point you're doing the Daniel Craig ones, those are fun. I like the fact that mostly Bond movies there are their own thing, but when you get to the Daniel Craig ones, they do start to tie together. So, for the most part, you can watch a Bond movie and be fine at, in any order. But the Daniel Craig ones do start doing like the MCU type thing where they start slowly tying in more and more to by the time you watch the final one, you do have a much bigger payoff if you've seen all the movies.
Yeah.
So, those I would say if you can watch in order, but the rest of them, it doesn't matter. You could skip around. You could watch on Her Majesty's Secret Service, then Goldfinger, then View to a Kill, and it's not going to hurt anything. So,
I've been watching them at my own
yeah.
pace, on just on what's available, kind of
Sure.
just what shows up next on watch this
There
next
you
or
go.
whatever. Yeah.
I need to revisit some of those classic ones because if nothing else, I want to. Man, you're gonna make me end up buying Moonraker if that's not one that's streaming because that's one I'd really like to watch with the kids. That's a fun one.
Well, I told Barb, like, since I'm not gonna buy the DVDs, I'm gonna probably buy the ones digitally that I want to see that are missing.
Are they?
So,
Is it a? Is it a better price? Like, can you get them like $10 or something in digital?
no, it's just more convenient.
Sure. I just hate when the digital ones cost more than a DVD. I bring myself to do it,
Yeah.
because a lot of times I'll be like, oh, let's just rent it, and then I'll jump on to rent it, and it'll be like, I don't know, say Moonraker on DVD is $8.98 is what I just looked up, and then the rental price will be like $7. I'll be like, ugh, $2 more just
Yeah,
to have
you
it.
don't say that's true, but if you look at it, I mean, I'm one to talk, right, with all the physical comic books I have,
Right.
stuff takes up
It
space,
does.
and The one thing that doesn't take up space is a digital copy.
That's true.
So you can take it with you anywhere and never have to, pull out anything or dig it out of a box or dig it out of a crate or wherever you store your DVDs.
I will argue, though, the one thing is don't buy it through Apple because they are the worst about getting your ID back. When I lost my original ID, I still never got it back from Apple, and I finally just gave up. And so I always, whenever somebody says Steve Jobs, always joke that he stole all my Motley Crue albums because I had all my Motley Crue through iTunes.
What do you mean they hacked your account or and you lost
I
it?
lost the ID. I could not get back in, and I went through that circle of doom where I would contact them. Then they would say, "Okay, you have 7 days, and we'll get back in touch with you." Then they'd get back in touch with me, and then it would time out, and it just it I it went on and on for like a few months, and I finally just said, "Screw it," and I lost like all that iTunes stuff I had bought.
Wow,
So
that
it
sucks.
does suck.
I would probably go just 'cause the TVs I've been buying are Fire TVs,
Sure.
and I would probably go through an integrated Amazon, buying it from Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I just looked. Prime Video is $3.89 to rent, $14.99 to buy for Moonraker. So yeah, that'd probably be
Yeah.
one I'd either try to
But
get.
I even have problem with the rental because you have to like watch it a certain way, I think. I gotta have to look at the rules. But I like watch movies in half hour increments because I
Sure.
exercise during them.
Right.
So it'll take me 3 sessions, and that's if I don't get distracted with something else. But
Yeah, I think you only have 48 hours with a rental, usually, once you
yeah,
start
so
it.
I yeah.
Well, there you go. Or you could always see if
I
they
mean
got
I.
it at the library. Then
I
you
could
don't
do
pay
that,
nothing.
yeah.
Yeah. That's what I might
'Cause
start doing.
the actual DVD set is like 130 some. It's not that much. I think it was 160 for every DVD Bond film
Right.
except for the latest Craig one.
Yeah.
So it was like had everything. And the I would watch every Bond film over again 'cause I'm really loving them. Like I'm really digging them.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if it's my current mindscape, but I don't see myself stopping this until I'm done. Just like with the Bronson films, I pretty much watched everything I could, and then I put on Just Watch everything that wasn't available. But I watched like 15 Charles Bronson films.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember you were on that Marilyn Monroe kick, and there was one I ran across the other day, and you said you hadn't seen it. That's one I really want to
Well,
watch. Was
the Marilyn Monroe kick didn't last long because I just couldn't find enough that was streaming.
Oh,
Like
sure.
none of it was available. So I watched a couple on Tubi, a couple on Amazon Prime, and then I was done.
Yeah, that stinks. I think there was for a while, Netflix would have the classics and stuff, but I think those days are long gone now.
Yeah. But I'm okay with it. So I've been doing just fine in the digital era.
Yeah, I read a book about film noir, and that was one of the ones it recommended was The Asphalt Jungle with Sterling Hayden, and it was an early Marilyn Monroe movie.
Yeah, she's not a bad actress. I guess I had this impression that she would be.
Right.
And I don't know, just because like the times like the only times I've seen her like in pictures like 'cause she's absolutely beautiful and then I've seen her documentaries and her stuff like that but I always thought she would have like this false front and I still think she did like I think she was like a two-face where she had a Marilyn Monroe identity that
Sure.
she tried to be and then a Norma Jean one
Yeah. Well, she was
and
probably smarter than she let on.
oh yeah she was
Yeah.
for sure.
Well, she knew what sold and what the men wanted and what women expected, I imagine,
Yeah.
All righty, let's do the grease pencil one. This is my last one of the day. This is House of Mystery number 241. This is from May of 76. So it opens, and Kane is having dinner with the mummy, werewolf, Frankenstein's monster, and Dracula. Because, it would always open with like one scene, and it says, "This is a Fear Festival," edited by Joe Orlando. I was trying to read who did the picture, and I can't make out the artist's name, but it's a fun one. So the first story is one by Jack Olick and art by Frank Robbins. I always liked Frank Robbins' stuff. It's got that, just that Frank Robbins vibe where just interesting panels. There's no like, there's gutters, but there's no like hard black lines defining the panels. Because he used to do a lot. He was ahead of his time in a lot of ways, Frank Robbins. You know how his Red Sonja stuff, it wasn't always held within the space. And it's fun to look at his art from, especially you're talking 76. Like I say, there'll be gutters. And but it doesn't hold it in the way like you typically think of a book from this era doing. Anyway, so this guy, his name is Cass. He hates cats. He's on a burglary, and he's running away, and he gets shot. And he finds this old lady, and he's like, "I'm sick. I need help." And she's like, "Oh, where'd you come from?" And she like takes him in the house, and she takes care of his wound, ties up his arm. And he's like, "Gun, where's my gun?" "Under your pillow, but you won't need it, dearie. Lucifer and I would like to live quietly and mind our own business. Rest now, I'll get you some food." I tell you that it's going to be bad when it's an old lady and she's got a cat named Lucifer, right?
That's not a good sign.
So he's faking like he's asleep, and he sees the woman and the cat next to the fireplace with a rock, and then all of a sudden the rock turns into a golden loaf of bread, and she's feeding Lucifer. And he goes, "That lady, she's a witch." And I'm like, "Yeah, of course she's a. I knew she was a witch the minute she said she had a cat named Lucifer." I mean, who has Lucifer in the 70s? If not old white ladies I knew didn't, you know? Anyway, so he's feeding the cat some bread, and he's like, "I saw what you did, witch. You're gonna turn this newspaper into money." She's like, "Oh, I can't do that. There's a price if you do that." He's like, "What's the price? The soul? Well, I'll tell you whose soul you're gonna give. You're gonna give the soul of that cat there, or I'm gonna shoot him." So she's like, "Oh, don't hurt Lucifer. He's all I have." So she gets her spell book out, and she turns all the newspaper into money. And he goes, "Money, money, money, money." And he's so excited. And he says, "Well, you are gonna turn me into somebody else because people know who I am and I'm on the lam. So you're gonna make my identity different." She's like, "Oh, hold on." And so, "I need something specific, and I need the middle finger of a dead man's hand." And he's like, "All right, I'm gonna go out and get it." So he goes off in a rainstorm, and he acts like he's gonna hitchhike. So a guy pulls over in to let him in his car to give him a ride. He says, "You're a real help, pal." So he gets in the car and he kills the guy, cuts his finger off, and takes it back to the old lady. So the old lady makes her potion and gives it to him. He's like, "So this will fix my identity?" And she's like, "Of course it will." And he's like, "Good." And he like shoots her. And he's like, "Well, you can't leave any witnesses behind." So he goes out in the yard and buries her, and Lucifer's just watching as it's happening. And he says, "Now I'm gonna drink this. What's happening?" And all of a sudden you see like these weird contortions, and he wakes up and he's surrounded almost like he's in a jungle, and he realizes they're all blades of grass. And he's like, "What's going on?" And what has happened was she shrunk him down to the size of a mouse. Well, if you remember, this guy's a guy who hates cats. So he runs out of the grass into Lucifer, of course. And what does Lucifer do? Lucifer picks him up and carries him away because cats, I don't know if you've ever had a cat, but cats often don't eat mice. They just kind of like beat them up. So he takes Cass away and plays with him, and you hear him screaming, and then Kane goes.
Do you think that's because they're domesticated, though? Like
I think if they were hungry and they needed to eat,
they're,
they would eat a
yeah.
mouse. But like, I mean, I feed my cat, and I think most houses, feed their cats. So yeah, I mean, they're not going to eat a mouse; they're just going to mess with it. So,
Do they kill it usually?
I've seen my okay. So I've had cats pretty much my whole life. I have never had an indoor cat kill a mouse. I have had outdoor cats kill them and then like leave them at your doorstep. You know what I mean? So like farm cats.
Because we have a neighbor's cat that comes into our backyard
Sure.
and does stuff, but I don't know what it's doing.
Yeah. Well,
It's usually underneath the deck, or
she'll probably keep mice away.
we have like sort of moles,
Yeah.
or I don't know what they're called,
Yeah.
but they dig some holes in the back, and
Probably is
she's always
moles.
digging those up,
Yep.
digging those up.
Yeah, we had a cat that would kill all sorts of stuff. She killed a baby possum one time and brought it to our back porch. I'm like, ugh, gross, dude. But yeah, these cats, would just play with the mice. And so that's that story. And then I love these. There's this one ad in here. It says, if you've ever said there must be a better way to earn a living, you should get our free career booklet. I love the picture. It's got this guy looking forlornly off into the distance and his wife looking concernedly at him. And it almost looks like a 70s ED ad or something. It's so weird. Let's see. So the other one is Death Pulls the Strings. This is Bill Finger, of all people. I thought that was kind of cool. And art by Nestor Redondo. You see a puppet of Dracula fighting the Wolfman. And they're like, oh, these puppets, they almost look alive. And then another puppet comes in and says, silver bullets shall destroy your power forever. And the puppeteer comes out and everybody claps and says, what a good job. But it turns out these were not actually puppets. These were small people with strings. So this guy was pulling one on them. So it turns out these three small folks, they were the smallest men in the world. And the guy who was playing the puppeteer used to be their barker, but their circus went out of business. So he decided that they were going to come up with some way to make money as they go from town to town. So the barker poses as a puppeteer. The small guys pose as monsters. They do kind of macabre plays. So it shows like an example. Bruno the puppeteer presents Mr. Hyde versus Frankenstein. And they would go to town and they were making good money doing that. And there was one night he asked them to do something. He says, I don't want to do it, Bruno. He says, don't talk back to me. I made you. I'm your master. So they go to another town and they read in the paper that the carnival they had left is actually back in business. So they're like, okay, let's do the show tonight. Then afterwards, we're going to tell Bruno we're done. So they go out and they do the typical play. It's got Mr. Hyde and Frankenstein's monster and the werewolf in it. And after the finale, everybody applauded because they're so impressed by these lifelike puppets because, as I've told you, they're actually really people. So he goes backstage and they said, well, we're leaving. He's like, you can never leave. I created you. I pulled the strings that give you life. I gave you life. Now I shall take away your life. Feel the wrath of your maker. And no, yeah. And so he kills him, which I don't know what good that did him, because like now he has no business anymore, but whatever. And he goes outside, he goes, I created what I have destroyed, I'm the master of all, I'm the creator, I am the power. And then it gets all biblical, because like a giant thundercloud turns into a hand, comes out of the sky, and shocks him with electricity. So basically, I guess it's saying like God didn't like being told that this guy was the maker. So these wires from an electric tower encircle his arms and legs and make him dance around as he's being electrocuted to death like he was a puppet. And then Kane ends it with think about Bruno and all dictators who would make puppets of human beings. Think and be forewarned. The end. And that was the last thing. They did have one of those they would do the little silly Dracula cartoons, and it has Dracula wake up, he turns into a bat and he's making a face, he flies to the gas station and he runs to the men's room because I guess Dracula had to pee. Gross. And then it has one of those, do you remember the Justice for All Includes Children ads, but with Superman? Okay, so there's one of those. So a bunch of kids are like beating the stuffing out of each other, and this guy comes up and goes, are you the school principal? This fighting is terrible. You should throw these boys out of school right here on the spot and keep them out. And the principal goes, that just isn't done. There must be a hearing before someone is suspended from school. And Superman says, he's right. Follow proper procedures means that everyone is treated alike. The right to ask questions means less chance for mistakes. and someone is suspended after a hearing, he can be sure he had all of his rights respected. Being considered innocent until proven guilty is one of our basic rights. Justice for all includes children. So, they don't care that there was basically like a race riot out behind the school. They just wanted the kids punished.
Yeah.
This is messed up. And I would say the last interesting thing, I did throw this up on Twitter as well, this the circulation stats for this. I always find these super interesting. So the average issues for House of Mystery in 1976 was 351,000. Actual number published was 325,000. Actual numbers during preceding 12 months was 145,000. And so it comes down to, they basically, the numbers that were going out and actually selling was, it looks like 147. So you had almost 120 plus that weren't, you know, were getting returned. So I think that's wild. Some of the numbers.
That's a lot of returns.
It's a crazy amount of returns. Yeah. And I think it's how many they were willing to.
That's how I thrived on comics. That's
right.
Is the returns that they ripped the covers off and threw them away.
And you know, I remember reading a lot of those as a kid too. But it's the crazy thing is for this era of comic books, the print runs were just astronomical compared to what you would see now, you know?
Oh yeah.
So that was another fun one. Once again, I think the first story was pretty strong. The second one was kind of meh. But it was weird. It was a Bill Finger of all people doing a horror comic in the 70s. That was weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Creator of Batman.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think if I had to say the winner of today, I think I'm going to go with the weird truck driving one from Charlton. That's probably.
Yeah, that's the one that sounded the best to me.
Yeah, that was my favorite of all the weird ones.
Maybe it was your passion talking about it, but came across, but it sounded like the best one. Plus, I like truck driving comics. I don't know why. Yeah,
it was good stuff.
I gotta look to see if there's a first appearance of BJ and the Bear.
The funny thing, I was gonna talk a little bit about Dragon Ball today, but then, like I told you, Henry was so gung-ho on I may have to record again tonight, and I was like, well, I'll save the Dragon Ball for him.
Yeah. Well, my last one is Beverly Hillbillies number one.
Ooh, I'm excited for this.
It's the first appearance of Beverly Hillbillies from Dell. Came out in April of 1963. Or around that time frame, that's the cover date.
Okay.
So, this is the Clampets. We all know their story. They were out in the middle of the boondocks in their home, and he was shooting at a rabbit or something for dinner, and hits an oil spot, and they became rich. And they're sort of like learning to live in Beverly Hills, and that's where this takes off. They have some shorts in there, like Granny trying to figure out a washing machine and ends up washing the clothes in the pool. You know how she would call it the concrete, what did they call it? The cement
pond. Yeah.
The cement pond.
Yeah.
So, and they were wondering, like, well, how are we going to get all the soap out of this thing that Granny's got, you know, all this soap in the cement pond. Ellie is her name, right?
Yeah.
Ellie and Jethro.
Yep.
Ellie was the one that was remarking on trying to get the soap out of the cement pond.
That's funny.
Because she was always going for a swim. Ellie liked to swim.
That's true.
So the Clampets get a knock on the door, and Granny's always yelling at them, like, you guys are lazy ever since you guys became rich. Like, you don't do anything. You just sit around and don't do anything. And somebody knocks at the door and says, I need help. My car's needs to be pushed so I can get it started. And he goes, could you use your car to push it? You know, and he goes, no, I'll just have Jethro push it. And, you know, he's pretty strong. So he pushes it. It gets started. They find out that the guy next door is a producer, And that, what do they don't know what a producer is. They think a producer is somebody that's like a farmer,
Oh,
you know, that
sure.
produces crops.
Right.
So,
Produce.
produce, yeah, creates produce. They're like, I wonder what kind of potatoes and tomatoes, you know, that this guy makes or whatever. And I wonder why he's saying that he's stressed out at work because he's having failing crops or something. So they say, well, let's go down to his place. And find out what's happening and help him with his crops because we got nothing better to do. So they load up the truck and then they go to the studio, and it's a film studio that he owns. And he is having troubles, not financially, but I guess stressed out wise because he's seeing a psychiatrist and he's on the bed and he's saying, you know, I have trouble, you know, letting myself bond to people and. I don't like to get other people to help me, but today these Clampets, they helped me get my car started, and I think I'm making progress from not being such an introvert, and they helped me out. And meanwhile, the Clampets go there and they're like, "What the hell's happening here?" So they get on this site and they think it's a farm,
Right.
but they have like a huge Trojan horse, and there's a bunch of soldiers getting inside the Trojan horse, and they destroy that horse. And some guy's making an alien film, and they have a huge, like, rodent, not a rodent, but insect trying to kill some astronauts. And Jethro's like, "Look at that huge bug! I want to go kill it." So he goes and kills the bug. So they're basically destroying set after set after set, and. The guy's inside of a psychologist, and his secretary's holding up all these people that are waiting to yell at him, you know, saying, "This guy's these Clampets are destroying all our sets," and all they want to do is figure out like why, you know, Ellie screws up. There's a matador scene, and she like pushes the matador, thinking she's saving his life, and. She does the bull and starts petting it. You know how she was really good with
Oh,
animals.
right. That was kind of her
So,
whole shtick, right?
yeah, that was her thing. So yeah, they destroyed a whole lot, and then at the end of the day, the guy comes out and looks like, "You destroyed my life. You know, you destroyed everything." And the Clampett just pulls out this wad of cash, and he's like, "Well, we'll pay for it all." And he's like, "Oh, I could buy another studio with all this cash." And it was like 10 grand or something. I don't know what it was, 100 grand. He just gave him and he was happy. So they moved. What an odd situation. This guy doesn't even grow any crops, and they still didn't get what he did after after all those shenanigans at the Hollywood lot.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
I used to love that show. I would say that was probably one of my favorite shows when I was, you know, in like elementary school because we didn't have cable, so you would watch whatever was, you know, on like,
UHF,
yeah, it
probably.
was on like the afternoon shows, and it would be like that, and I Dream a Genie. And Bewitched, and I just loved all those like 50s and 60s old sitcoms, and that was definitely one of my favorites because it was so silly. I always really liked Granny, and of course Ellie was hot, so you know.
Yeah, and they always had the what was her name? The banker
Oh yeah.
and his assistant.
Yeah, the assistant was the funny one. Yeah, I can't think of their names
Yeah.
right now.
She had a real stern, straight look to her.
She did, but boy, she loved Jethro.
Yeah, she did.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. So that's all I had.
Well, cool. I think that was a good nice spread you had today. And a little bit of movie, a little bit of cartoon, a little bit of TV and a comic all wrapped into one. That was fun.
Yeah, there's a good distribution.
Yeah. You just need
I'm
next time
heading
you're
back into
working an old time radio show and you'll have everything.
I'm heading back into childhood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't. Sometimes I feel like I never quite left it, man. You
Yeah,
know.
I feel that way too,
Yeah.
but
It gets.
I'm turning into William Hurst, where he started to de-age at the his older life and go back into thinking he was a kid.
I almost read for today, but because I got in on that anthology kick, I decided to just roll with it. I almost read for today the Power Lords comic.
From DC.
Yeah, I did pick those up. I've got the three of them, and I figured I'd either read them for our show or for the show I do with the kids at some point. But I don't know. I hadn't. That was one I never cared about. It was off my radar. I know.
I just remember the ads. That's all I remember for the toys.
Yep, same.
And they used to be on the back cover or the inside back cover.
It's like he would go from orange to blue or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know Kirk is a big fan of those. The Oni relaunch of it's coming down the pike, and so I was like, oh, I'm gonna grab those while they're nice and cheap. Oni has did two of my favorite comics I've read recently out of new books. Have you read is it Night People?
Night People.
Night People was really, really, really good. And the Cemetery Kids Don't Die one was pretty darn good too.
I don't know if those just came out. I'm not sure I have them
Oh,
or
okay.
if they're in this shipment that's coming.
Oh my gosh, I got home from.
Let me see if I have Night People. That sounds
It
familiar.
was good.
The other one doesn't. Night
I busted
People.
open the boxes when I got home from St. Louis, and I had to like. I know you know this.
I have Night People.
Okay.
What is the other one? Cemetery Kids?
Cemetery Kids Don't Die. But I know you go through this. I opened both those boxes and I had to start bagging and boarding and putting them into my database. And I was telling Kristen, I was like, this is definitely my least favorite part of collecting is when you have to bag and board and catalog everything when you first get it. Because I'm OCD, man. I'm like, if what if there's a fire and like the house burns down before I get them in the database. I want to have proof that I. And she's like, don't you have the invoice? I'm like, oh yeah, that's true. But I always like to get stuff in the database as soon as I can.
That's the first thing I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't do it for so long, so now I have like a whole closet upstairs and two rows of books downstairs that are uninventoried. It drives me nuts. I just don't have time.
Yeah.
So you're doing it right. That should be the first thing.
That's what I do first, and then I'm bag and board them.
Because then you also don't know what you have, and then you might buy it again.
Which I've
So
done that too, yep.
it's crazy. Yeah, so that's the first thing I do is when I get my shipment, it goes into the database, and then from there, I bag and board them and put them in a to-read box.
Yep.
And before I used to do the opposite, I wouldn't inventory them or bag and board them until after I read them, and that was a horrible, horrible idea.
That.
That was I wish I could slap myself. I don't regret a lot in life, but if I could just take younger Mike and say, just do your job a little earlier, just do it.
Sometimes I will get overwhelmed with how many I haven't read, and what I'll do is I'll just go ahead and file them for later. But I even have a system for that. A single piece of tape in the middle means unread. Double taped, one on each end, means it's read. So
Yeah.
I can flip through my files pretty quick, even
Well, I
downstairs.
mylar all my books, but I don't tape them until
Okay.
they're read.
Yeah. That.
That's the key. So they're bagged and boarded, but the flap is facing up if they're unread.
Okay, that makes sense.
So,
So you got a method
yeah.
to it, so, 'cause I know you don't always read stuff when you get it either.
That's true.
And 'cause
And
a lot of
it's even
times.
more hard for me because I have two storage units I have to go to
Oh,
for
dang, I
the
didn't know you
newer
had two
stuff.
storage units.
I have three, but two of them have comics in there.
John Jackson Miller, the guy who's into comics and used to write Star Wars comics.
But he also used to do the numbers,
I think he
like
still
the.
does, yeah.
I don't, does he really? 'Cause how can he?
Does he not do the numbers anymore?
But they don't show sales numbers anymore. They
Oh,
don't do the
that's
top
true. You're
100.
right, because not everything's through Diamond anymore.
And they're all just different distributors, and Diamond doesn't even release their numbers, so
Oh, maybe he
nobody's
doesn't.
releasing anything.
That's a good point. But he has a climate controlled storage unit behind his house. So almost like,
oh wow,
you know, like a lot of people have like a workshop or a garage behind the house.
Yeah, yeah,
he's
yeah.
got a freestanding, and that's where he keeps his comics. Because I remember him doing an interview, and he was talking about, well, that's because, you know, he's a big Don Rosa and Donald Duck, Uncle Scrooge fan, and so he's like talking about all the books he's got. And I think I'm sure he probably has all the Don Rosa stuff, because I mean that's modern, not like the Karl Barks or anything. And
yeah.
And when he was telling about it, he's like, yeah, he's got climate controlled thing behind the house. And I was like, dang, that'd be cool, because then you don't have to worry about the space in the house, but you also have like you got to walk through the snow maybe.
Yeah.
But other than that,
true.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, you can reach Joe at Iowa's Joe.
Yep.
On the X.
Yes, indeed.
And, do you have the same name on Blue Sky?
I have it on Blue Sky, Threads, and Instagram at this point. I've just
there you go.
I started using it on everything. Keep it easy.
You can reach me at Mike Myers Brunch and on X and Blue Sky, and also go to the Facebook page Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button, follow all the episode threads there, or go to the website at www.geekbrunchpodcast.com. You don't need the www anymore, but you could do put it in there.
I love it.
All right. Well, you have a good one, and I hope you enjoy. I hope you do another podcast. There you go.
Yeah, well, you might. The world may be hearing from me again today. Have a good one, Mike. It was good talking to you.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.